Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Nick, it's not often that I've seen a situation where it's a 3-on-2 match. The babyfaces have the advantage. And the booking is as strong as that was there to tell a really good story where the babyfaces get the win despite having the extra man. But the way it was booked, the way it played out, I thought was really smart. You know, they attack Orton beforehand, and then ultimately the heels get their comeuppance and are left lying in the ring. But, of course, you still have that sense of Knight and Styles not getting along and Orton kind of being in it for himself. I thought they told a good story in the main event. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I think especially what was strong is when the Bloodline attack Orton at the beginning, they are supposed to be smart, and they need to be presented as being smart, even without Roman Reigns. There needs to be that shrewdness there, that taking advantage of opportunities, that pack mentality. That coming through was much better for me than, is there going to be a pause, like, to see if there's a third man, if anybody's entrance music comes out? It shows to me a confidence that they are still the Bloodline, they are still tight, and they still represent something greater than just having some random third in there. I thought this was a fine show. I don't think that at the end of the day, Wade, you're watching this and making it necessarily feel like you're in WrestleMania season, which we are. But I do think that there's a intriguing way of approaching this Fatal 4-Way heading into the Royal Rumble with where all of the opponents to Roman Reigns lie right now and, you know, culminating with that big Shield powerbomb at the end. That was a message in and of itself, but definitely an interesting approach to it. But overall, I would say not as exciting of a SmackDown as we've seen in the past.
Yeah. I think the dispute that Styles and LA Knight had was well done in the sense that you can sort of pick, if you're a viewer, you can sort of pick your own version of who was right and who was wrong. They didn't just hit you over the head with like, well, you should cheer for this guy or see this guy as the one being unreasonable. Knight jumped off the ring apron to go after Solo, but Styles is about to make the tag. You can see Knight's perspective of why he needed to take care of Solo. You can see Styles' perspective. You got to be there for me. Did you do that on purpose? Styles pauses, doesn't know if he wants to take in Knight. Can he trust him? Does he want to give him the glory of perhaps getting the win? Boom, he gets hit from behind, but he ends up ducking, and Knight gets hit. It was just, it's wrestlers are going to be facing each other. You don't want any of them to seem like buffoons or evil or backstabbers, but you also want them to feel like independent agents out for their own interests, which is what they are. I think there was, you know, to take a match where you sort of tease Roman Reigns at the very beginning, and then you're just waiting for them to reveal Reigns isn't there, because if he was, they would have advertised him. And then, then you have the gimmick of we're going to weave something into an hour and a half of the show, which is Heyman looking for partners. And you know that's probably not going to go well. But as a regular WWE viewer, you're like, I wonder, maybe someone will team with them. Who might that be, if it's anyone? And, of course, nobody wants a team with them. And so you get to enjoy seeing Heyman rebuffed for all kinds of reasons, one after another. And then in the end, it becomes 3-on-2. But like you said, the heels were smart enough to make sure that the fact that Heyman didn't get them a partner didn't put them in a situation where they were at a disadvantage until Orton had time to recover. So I thought a lot of smart things were done in a match that's a little unconventional, but we've seen variations of it before.
Right. Well, I think, first of all, LA Knight, his pulled focus moment was actually very, very good. It looked very reasonable, and would have been reliant on him to not make that look clumsy or corny. So I think he did do a good job there. First, I have to say, Midweight, I didn't know that that was AJ Styles. I thought it was Stevie Nicks with this new costuming we have going on out there with the big black drapery. Come on, Wade, you needed a little bit more humor in that one. But it was.
We're four minutes in, and the fashion.
Listen, I that's what I'm bringing to the table. Like, I don't know that this look is working for anybody, but you're right. It was a reasonable conflict. But you know, Wade, I actually think, you know, what you just said about the partnership with the Bloodline, there's a story in there. you know, don't forget that when the Bloodline first formed, it was kind of like the rotating door of people trying to sit under the Bloodline learning tree, more specifically the Paul Heyman, Roman Reigns learning tree, and how far we've come in the past 3 years where you don't have an Apollo Crews sitting there waiting to learn from these, you know, the wise men, if you would. You have people now just turning them down left and right, and there really is no one to fill in for them. I mean, that tells a story of where they are, and I think that that's actually a really interesting twist in the long-standing story of where the Bloodline started versus where it is now.
What do you think of Paul Heyman at this point doing more of showing more range than he did with Brock Lesnar, or that he did for most of the way with the Bloodline, that he's getting to show a little bit more of his comic range, he's always trying to live up to Roman Reigns' expectations for him. He doesn't want to let him down. He wants to be in control and less subservient to others in the Bloodline as he was with Sami Zayn. Very, very cunning and seemed to enjoy, as did the Usos, kind of jerking Sami around. Now we see this multiple instances of Heyman, of course, with Pretty Deadly. He's not going to be as weak relative to, say, standing opposite of Bobby Lashley or even Carlito and pitching him. Are you enjoying the entertainment aspect of Heyman, and does this side of him that we're seeing more of lately help or hurt the Bloodline and the whole dynamic in terms of where Heyman fits in with them?
Well, it hurts the mystique of the Bloodline. You know, I have kind of drawn reference to the fact that where the Bloodline is now, specifically with Paul Heyman, but more specifically Jimmy Uso, is we're entering into caricature territory in that, you know, when you watch long-standing series, so let's look at The Godfather, which I think is actually what this is very loosely based on. You know, by the time you got to the third Godfather, which many people don't like, I happen to think it's really great. But, you know, there are some characters that have, like, drastically changed from one to three, and they've gone into this, like, really character arena that they weren't really in when they were much more they had much more distinct personalities in the beginning. You know, even like you see sometimes characters on TV shows where a loose one, this sounds stupid, but there was a character on Roseanne that she was just one of the daughters in the first few seasons, an everyday kind of daughter, and by the like later seasons she's like an idiot. And, like, that's the running joke, is that she's an idiot. And it becomes a little less less serious. It becomes, you know, just into that something that just makes it feel more everyday, ordinary wrestling storyline as what the Bloodline is, with where Jimmy is now specifically. I think Solo's in a unique spot within this group in that he is there to take losses, but he should not be taking so many losses, kind of thing. Because as an enforcer, if you're so tough but you're getting pinned as often as you are, how strong are you? But Paul Heyman is also different here. I mean, you don't want him to be approaching, or at least I don't want him to be approaching Roman Reigns as he would any other person that they managed. One of the real special things, and Wade, I can remember this to the earliest conversations you and I have ever had, that really made Paul Heyman so special was because he was so intimidated by all things Roman Reigns, he behaved differently, even when he was not around. Now that we're kind of going back to that old everyday Paul Heyman, is there a greater mystery and a greater mystique that has evaporated around Roman Reigns? And I would say yes. And while that may be intentional as part of a larger story, it's hard not to view it as diminishing in the immediacy.
Yeah, I'm glad you answered the question that I asked. And I'm nodding along with some of what you're saying also. I committed myself to the word glad. So it's like, even if that's not really where I was going, I agree that there's an aspect of the range that Heyman is showing that feels like it diminishes to some degree the gravitas that the Bloodline had. Heyman has always been his character has been what's the right word? He's not like pathetic, like, oh, I'm gonna he's smart. He's smarmy. He's subservient to Roman. But I always felt like he was doing what he needed to do in order to get ahead. He would stare at Roman and study him, like the way a dog studies in, their human companion when they're trying to figure out if it's time for food or a walk or what mood they're in. Like he just his whole life revolved around, I need to know Roman's mood because it's my job to manage it because he's the top guy in this group.
Uh-huh.
And so while he seemed subservient and certainly not an alpha, you felt like he was a wise man. He knew his role and he put his ego aside when it came to it. I'm studying Roman. That's my job. And now there is a little bit more of a 90s Heyman manager, you know, just like, you know, a little more frazzled and disheveled and desperate to make things work. And so there's more range, but I'm not sure how I feel about it. There's part of me that just likes seeing Heyman show more range because there was a repetitiveness to it. Under Lesnar, he didn't really – there's stretches of time where he wasn't, you know, cutting these just big statement promos. I wanted Lesnar to talk more too, but where it felt like there was a sameness to some of what he was saying. Now he's getting to show a little bit more of the talent that people who have watched the whole trajectory of his career from the 80s know he has. And it's a new chapter for the Bloodline. So I have mixed feelings because you don't want the Bloodline to seem like it's just running in place. And you've seen one segment with Heyman and Solo and Jimmy, you've seen them all. It's the same thing that they were doing last year. It's different. I think it's a strategic decision by Heyman to, one, just get more TV time and show more range, but try to freshen up the Bloodline with, I think he's smart enough to know, the price he's paying is a little bit of what he had carved out the wise man character being up until we're seeing more of this.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. Listen, it doesn't make sense that everything would be so strategically placed along the way to then just be thrown out the window. Like, I do believe everything, even when it came down to Paul Heyman dyeing his hair and whatnot, all of his choices are just as specific as, you know, as anybody else's in this storyline. To me, though, it's we're heading into a territory where then I worry they've stripped too much away, Wade, is I guess what I'm trying to say is at some point there isn't a whole lot of main event feel to the group at all when Roman is not around. That's a problem for me. If this has a direct comparison point to Hulk Hogan in the NWO, you know, there was always time when the NWO would appear. And if Hogan wasn't around, you know, depending on what composition was around him, it felt really like, oh, these are just the jobbers from the other show just with black shirts on. But that's not always the case. If Scott Hall or Kevin Nash, there was enough there that carried it over the finish line of feeling main event without him being there. We're added to the territory now. I would argue we're there where when Roman is not around, this feels like a show that should be on FS1. And even when the Bloodline is in the main event. And that's kind of where I thought tonight felt like it should have been.
Interesting, yep. Well put. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll move on to other topics. We are hoping to hear from Sam in Nebraska, but he did let me know the weather is horrible there, and his focus is going to be on his safety rather than talking to us. I chewed him out.
How dare he?
He's got to get his priorities straight. Yeah, exactly. We are hoping to hear from him, but we might not, so we'll see. But we got a lot more to talk about from the show, and a lot more I want to hear from you about, Nick. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a bunch of podcasts throughout the week, all about professional wrestling, including our post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and also our flagship. Todd Martin joined me on the flagship yesterday. Check that out. That's our blue logo show. If you search Wade Keller on your podcast app, you'll see the red and blue logo show up. Subscribe to both. The red logo is these post shows, and the blue logo features some of our interviews over the years and also our weekly flagship. The other voice you hear on the show is Nick Barbati, and he is a podcaster on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Nick, I often forget, and it's embarrassing. What's your co-host's name?
Tom Collihue, Mr. Tom Collihue.
Oh,
you know this.
Yes, Tom. Yes, Tom. I don't know why I so often forget his name. But you guys do a great job covering and focusing on WWE. What do you have in store for us this weekend with your new show?
Well, this week we are really entering you. Tom was on assignment last week, as I like to say, Wade, and he is back this week, and we are really taking a look heading into the Royal Rumble on not necessarily the predictions yet. We still have another week before we head into that territory, but looking at the longer term of WrestleMania and working backwards from there of things that make sense, things that don't make sense. What are some of the plannings that we would do, others that we wouldn't, and really what we think WWE will do in the interim before we head into really locking in our predictions next week. I mean, we are at our three-year anniversary this week for Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Avenger, which I would argue is one of the best wrestling podcasts out there, and I say that humbly and honestly. So by all means, everyone take a listen, give us a shot, and I think you'll be addicted every Saturday.
Awesome. Sounds like a fun show. And I was joking. I know
of
Don's
course.
Name. I never forget.
Yeah. Don, yeah.
all right. So, by the way, if you're not subscribing to the PW Torch Data Cast, different theme every day of the week with different hosts, different focus. It's a cool lineup of shows. You will find one or more that become part of your podcast schedule, your routine throughout the week. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app. And subscribe to that. And while you're at it, you'll also see our charcoal logo, PW Torch VIP logo pop up. Subscribe to that too. It's free. You get free samples of our VIP shows on there. And then you can also upgrade if you're using the Apple Podcast app, using your Apple account, you can upgrade right within that app and get the full slate of all our podcasts, including our VIP exclusives and the ad-free versions of all of our free shows. That's what happens when you search PW Torch and subscribe to both the Daily Cast, the colorful logo, and then the charcoal logo.
And Wade, you said Martin was on the flagship this week?
Yes.
Very
I'll
nice.
Just say
okay.
Yes. I'll play. I'll pretend I didn't hear. So if you're live streaming our show, give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. And when you call push 1, we'd love to hear from you. And when you push one, that plays you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can, as always, email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com if you would rather contribute to the show that way. Okay, I want to follow up on something that from our opening topic, and that is just the decision to go with a four-way match at the Royal Rumble. Nick, talk about the decision to do that, whether you liked it, and elaborate a little bit more on what you thought, if they did a good job tonight, just in terms of putting those three in the ring at once, opposite the Bloodline, but not Roman, as a way to advance the dynamic with three challengers. Paul Heyman said mathematically, Reigns is almost assured of losing, which is kind of silly, but you know, you want to create that sense of jeopardy when most people are not expecting Reigns to lose the belt. And then also just how you think it's going to play out at the Rumble if you're willing to jump ahead to that chapter in your analysis.
Right. So first of all, I didn't like Paul Heyman making that comment. I actually felt that was out of character. It didn't really match. If we're talking about a lot of things that have shifted along the way, that one didn't strike me as authentic to Paul Heyman's character, regardless of any shifts or tweaks he might have had. So that stuck out to me as a little too loose by half as it regards to the approach they were taking. I don't like the four-way match. Now, I felt like I was on like the Twilight Zone when it was first announced, and I was on Twitter, and people were actually excited about it. I thought, wait a minute. So you're telling me that this is a more exciting scenario than having Roman one-on-one with Randy Orton, which I still think would have been important. We have not had that match that I can recall, at least in a big way, of this title reign of Roman Reigns. And I felt like, you know, I don't know if they're saving it for another day or if they just wanted to avoid having Randy Orton take a pin or just a lost period at this point in his return. But, you know, to me, there's only so much time in life we have left, and Randy Orton has had a long career so far. Why wouldn't we take this opportunity that seemed right in front of us to have a real showcase match at the Royal Rumble? More than that, though, I think it took the intrigue of having some, you know, very strong competitors for the Royal Rumble out of that match. Now, given the layup that they might have planned for that Royal Rumble, they might have said, not having the disappointment of LA Knight not winning here isn't something isn't so bad to not have it in the Royal Rumble, and that's a very real possibility. But the idea that this is a four-way does not intrigue me at all. I think it puts Roman Reigns at very little risk, and I don't think makes it a must-see match by any stretch of the imagination. I do think WWE producers have perfected the approach to the four-way match that it makes it very exciting, a lot of nonstop action that seems like very thrilling and exciting, and ultimately not really one that you go back and rewatch at the end, but feels really good in the immediacy. And that's kind of how I'm looking at this match. I think if we are headed towards maybe the later days of Roman Reigns' title reign, or even just heading him into WrestleMania, I would like him to continue to be at peak on top of peak in terms of the steps that he's taking, whether it is against The Rock or Cody Rhodes, whatever that actually looks like. But and I think by defeating a Randy Orton at this stage would mean a hell of a lot more than being in a four-way where he pins AJ Styles or LA Knight just to avoid pinning Randy Orton, but to have them in the match. I think that's kind of how people interpret moments like that rather than some big win for Roman Reigns. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. All right, very good. Let's go to our calls and begin with Mike in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Mike, good to hear from you. What's been right about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, what's going on, Wade? So making my return to calling in, I had to take a little bit of a self-imposed leave of absence ever since kind of predicting that Dolph Ziggler was the devil over there in AEW. So I'm taking my lumps on that one.
You took a hiatus when our Twitch board was down for a few weeks. So good time.
Right. Yeah, it was actually just the holidays. Was not around too. I was really busy, but so I had to actually was got a free Friday night here, and I was watching. So I figured I'd listen to the show, and then I heard Nick was on, and this is kind of cool. I live in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and I'm at this convenience store around like Halloween time. It's the Sheik.
I'm riveted. Sheik. I'm riveted about what's going to happen.
Yeah, I know. So you never know what you're going to find, but it's like, you go into the Sheets and there's like signs, like, people have advertisements out there, like, they'll wash your dog or they'll detail your car, whatever's like pinned up. And there's this advertisement for this comedy show at this club that I guess, I don't know, it's like a few miles away from same place here in like the Hershey area. And it says, I just happened to look at it, and it says Nick Barbati on it. And I'm like, is this, so I don't know. I'm assuming it's the same guy, Nick. So I didn't get to see
it's
you, unfortunately.
Not.
It was, but was no, that, was
that
you?
No, that's not me. That is, no, it is not me, but I know exactly who it is. It is my, so this is a very funny story, but I might keep it brief for everybody. It's my dad's cousin Nikki's son, Nikki. There's many Nikki's in my family. And
okay.
Cousin, wow. Distant cousin Nikki lives in Pennsylvania and is doing the comedy circuit. So I only know this because I've Googled myself obsessively and seen the skit. I don't know that I would have tickets to it, for the record.
Yeah, all right. Well, no, that's good to know then. So next time Nick's around, I won't go over there and say it's the guy from Wade Keller's call-in. So awesome. Well, anyway, just wanted to mention that. So I really enjoy you and Tom. It's a great show you guys have. Been listening to that for a long time now. Really funny and good
Thank
stuff
you.
Too. So
thank you.
Two things. I really just called in. I mean, I'll leave the Bloodline stuff to other people. I don't want to say I'm bored with it, but it's okay. I mean, I can't wait for the Royal Rumble for other reasons. I think what's happening maybe on the other on Raw is maybe a little bit more important to the Royal Rumble. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about with that. But tonight, two things happened. First of all, the Austin Theory landing what appeared to be on his neck. I can't figure that's. Storyline. I think that was probably precaution, but it looked pretty gruesome. Just wanted to see if you guys caught that and what your thoughts were.
Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I thought at the very beginning of it, when I first saw it, I said, oh, this looks like a storyline ending just so, you know, they don't have Carmelo Hayes lose here. But upon further, you know, replays, you could see, I mean, they really truly landed directly on Austin Theory's neck. So that went away there. I mean, I think the good news, I guess it's good news, I'm not a medical expert, but his body was moving after that happened. So, you know, God willing, God bless him. I hope that he is all right there. But that was a really, really nasty ending. And you know what? It's good on WWE to not push those moments and to wrap that match up. I thought that was a good decision.
Yeah, I don't even think it was a decision. I mean, I don't think they could have gotten up. I mean, that was scary looking. Just the heads colliding, landing on each other. And, I mean, instantly, I just assumed Theory was in worse shape. But then Carmelo kind of had the arm extended a bit, and he looked out of it. And you could just see the ref was just like, okay, both guys are down. I mean, there's no way to even do the old, and not that they should, and I'm glad they don't, but the, you know, Steve Austin, Owen Hart, quick roll up, you know, and then let's get out of here and assess the damage type situation, which, you know, I disagreed with doing way back then. And I'm glad that they don't do it now. This is a good example of safety. I mean, between, I liked Corey Graves in the way he handled it. There's a reason, you know, they trust him on commentary the way that they do. You know, he's like, this is why, you know, we don't try this at home. And we put safety first, and they transitioned well. They didn't dwell on it. I was almost thinking they weren't going to replay it because it was pretty, you know, graphic's not the right word, but I cringed watching it. You know, the impact was so hard. But in a way, I'm glad that they did because it really would erase the notion that this was just a cheap finish that they're trying to get out of one of them doing a job. Cause it was real obvious something didn't go quite right on that Spanish fly off the rope. So it seems like they'll be okay, but I wouldn't be shocked if they both get diagnosed with a concussion. But in terms of, you know, some serious neck injury, hopefully, you know, there's no broken, you know, broken orbital bones or neck complications from that. But yeah, I mean, it happens. And it's why I don't take for granted, I don't know if that's the right phrase. It's why I push for an economy of moves in wrestling, because even if almost always people pull them off, there's a risk in everything that wrestlers do. And therefore, if you take a risk, it should count for something in the story of the match. It shouldn't just be trying to feed gluttonous fans gratuitous high spots and risk-taking so they can chant, this is awesome. And I like matches where there is an economy of moves, and sometimes even then, in a WWE-style match, things are going to go wrong. But that's why you want to minimize moves that don't matter, because at least if you get hurt doing a move, it should be part of a story that does matter. But it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah,
there's no way around it. Yeah.
Yeah, Wade, you're right. You don't want to add, like, salt to the wounds in a moment like this. Not that that's what you're doing, but just by belaboring this point. But, you know, a part of me was thinking, you know, once I get my brain aligned, I went, oh, yeah, that was not supposed to happen once I looked closer at it. You know, a Spanish fly should be important. I mean, it should be a really spectacular move that's brought out for very special occasions. Even I was thinking, you know, the Ricochet, Logan Paul spot or whatever. You know, that didn't go that great either back at SummerSlam, I believe it was. But even still, like, you know, I like how you said that, an economy of the moves of, you know, that doesn't need to be on a SmackDown, you know, in the, you know, just before in the penultimate segment. It just doesn't, like, the risk isn't always worth, you know, isn't worth the reward in these cases.
I'll use a food analogy for my philosophy on wrestling moves and matches. I've, you know, read this and I heard people say it. It's okay to eat junk food or, you know, snacks, but be conscious while you're doing it. Don't unconsciously eat a half a bag of potato chips. Like, if you're going to eat a piece of cake, savor it. Don't mindlessly eat it. Like, really enjoy it. So if you're going to take a chance in the ring, you're going to do something where something could go wrong. You can slip. There can be a slight alteration in what you intend to happen that happens. Just be sure that it was part of a meaningful part of a match. And again, not just a gratuitous number of high spots for a gluttonous crowd wanting to be fed a bunch of high spots. And so every move should count, just as every snack should be saved. All right.
Was that you watching me eat those chips earlier, Wade?
I'm not saying anything, Nick. I don't want to give up my
I'm about 3 pounds up. Don't judge me.
All right. Very good. Go ahead, Mike, back to you.
Yeah. And, I mean, the whole little setup to it, I don't know. It just seemed like a weird maneuver there at the time. Like, it looked like he kind of – Carmelo was the one facing backwards. It looked like he kind of slipped off the ropes and they were kind of – off the turnbuckle, I guess. They were kind of trying to set it up, and it kind of took a little while. I know. I happened to be paying attention at that moment when it happened, and then it was just sort of instant. But the point is, I don't know whether that was – I'm curious as to who you think – I'm assuming that was a Carmelo Hayes win if, you know, everything was actually stopped legitimately. I'm not sure where that's going. I'm not sure if Carmelo's sort of playing I don't watch NXT as closely, but I know that he's sort of heelish over there, and he's just maybe sort of a cocky babyface as they're kind of trying to portray him on SmackDown. So assuming that was going to be a Carmelo win, but I like Austin Theory. I think he's, you know, there's got to be – I mean, the guy – they had him beat John Cena. There's got to be something in store for the guy. So hopefully he recovers from that. But do you agree that was probably going to be a Carmelo Hayes win before that happened?
I do, but I wouldn't rule out a cheating win for Theory just to extend things too. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I do think Carmelo is in need of a win, especially after losing in the tournament. But, I mean, you can't put it past them to, you know, try something different.
So the only other thing I wanted to mention
was – I guess
Mike
could have seen it go either way. Yeah.
Yeah, agree. Oh, agree.
Go ahead, Mike.
The only other thing I noticed tonight that was, that I thought was good was the Bianca Bailey match. I'm a big Bailey fan. Thought that it was whatever's going on with damage control is intriguing.
Nick, let me pause you, Mike. Nick, I'm hearing a little bit of back. Sorry, Mike. I'll pause you for a second.
Yep.
Nick, I'm hearing some background shuffling or noises, and so just want to alert you to that. I don't know if you want to push mute if you're having to shift your mic or something.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm,
go ahead, Mike.
I'm not doing anything different, but okay.
Okay,
yeah, sorry if it's me. I'm just basically looking at the Bailey match. There was a spot there. It was pretty clever, I guess. You know, she was she put Bianca on the outside, kind of distracted the ref for a little bit, and meanwhile, all of her faction is out there, and they don't do anything. Where they'd be putting the boots, you know, to Bianca. So, setting up something for, you know, further. And then after the match, they were kind of still, you know, I don't know what is going on there, but it intrigued me. So again, being a Bailey fan, I like to see storyline around her. Looking forward to seeing what, you know, happens with her. Whether there's, I don't know. I'm not here to predict the Royal Rumble, but just wanted to say that it was a cool moment tonight. And that's about it, guys. Appreciate the time.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, let's good to hear your voice again. Let's talk about that, Nick. I thought the Bailey Belair match was well done. I thought there were a lot of just well executed, interesting transitions and different spots. I thought the having Bailey's cohorts not want to help her revs up the storyline that seemed to be paused for a couple of weeks. Where Bailey's trying to fit in, but she isn't with them. She's left. No, there's meetings happening that she's not part of. And here they are with a plan that they didn't tell her about, which is we want to see you win on your own. And they're saying it with a straight face to her. And so she can't be as upset as she would if she could prove that they were intentionally leaving her out of the game plan that involves her. But obviously they're leaving her out of the game plan that involves her. But what's she going to say? I can't win without your help. All she's saying is we're a group. We should take advantage of helping each other. And they're ostensibly giving her a boost, saying you could do it on your own, just like you will at the Rumble. And so this dynamic continues where Bailey's on the outs. I'm curious where it's heading, Nick, because it'd be weird to do a babyface turn because you wanted your cohorts to cheat and they wouldn't. And so now you're the babyface and they're the heels. But I don't see that whole group turning babyface either. They just seem like a group of mean girls who are deciding to exclude her. And that seems to be the main direction it's going that could lead to Bailey being a babyface. But it's quite the journey we're on if one of the chapters is Bailey wants them to cheat and they won't. What do you think of tonight's match, and what do you think of the ongoing dynamic in that group?
Well, I thought the match was good. I think when you say where it's going to the Royal Rumble, Wade. I mean, this is going to be one of the big storylines that I think unfurls at the very end of the actual Rumble itself. There is being, to me, way too big of a story made into of Bayley winning the Royal Rumble for her to actually win the Royal Rumble. I think it seems too obvious. It just seems like they're leaning into that too much a bit. In fact, for what I think makes the most sense is that it ultimately comes down to Becky versus Bayley at the Royal Rumble. Becky wins, and then, you know, after a brief celebration, exits the room, leaving Bayley to, you know, face the music with the damage control turning on her. And I think that then, you know, simultaneously gets to the two women's title matches at WrestleMania. Because it just, to me, at this point, I think you're right. I think, you know, let's say, how does anybody turn babyface in this process if Bayley, say, wins the Royal Rumble? Like, I mean, she then, even on her own, is there, I mean, yes, it becomes more of like, if she wins it using very proper, without any help means, then sure. I mean, I guess that can be a babyface move in and of itself. But I do think that this is going to be one of those turns that is, they're all heels, but all the other worst heels turn on the one heel who, you know, is at least likable. And I think that that's how we get to a babyface with Bayley. Not the best written storyline I would put forth, but I think probably a necessary path to get Bayley on a comeuppance tour or a tour where she, you know, apologizes for everything that she's done and, you know, all that kind of stuff and tries to get it back in everyone's good graces. I mean, I think even visually that plays out pretty well.
All right, very good. I don't have follow-up. Let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, someone you're familiar with, Nick. Sean, welcome. Good to hear from you. Glad you called in tonight.
Yeah, Wade, Happy New Year. I haven't talked to you since the New Year began, I don't think. And, you know, Nick's my guy. Even
no, we haven't.
My signal was messing up like crazy on, you know, when I was on with him this last time. And it was kind of – I listened back and I was like, man, that's annoying when – you know, because I always hear people's, you know, feeds go off or something happened and you're like, you know how it kind of annoys you in the minute, but then it happens to you and you're like, oh crap, well that was me that time. Well, I can't really be annoyed because it was me. But you know, it
was a great show, Sean. It was a really great show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to go, I mean, glad to be on with you guys. Of course, you guys are two of the best. I was enjoying talking with you. Like going with the Bayley, what you guys were just talking about. Yeah. I didn't really like match at all, honestly. I don't like the way this is going. I don't, like you said, Nick, I mean, I think this is going to be a Bayley face turn, but I just don't like the way it's going. I don't think a face should be defined that way. I think you should tell a better story. If that's what they come up with, I don't like it. I mean, yes, I want Bayley to be a face. I want to root for her, but that doesn't get me excited about rooting for her that way. I just wish they would tell a better story there. And so Bianca, I wanted to go to the Bianca side of it because the match tonight obviously was really good. Bianca got another strong win. I feel like she's beaten Bayley like what, 5 times now. Where do you think they're going with Bianca here coming toward Mania? Because I feel like, you know, they're giving her some wins. I just don't feel like her character in general just feels in a weird place to me. What have you guys thought about Bianca and the way they've kind of portrayed her lately, other than her getting wins, which is a good thing? But I just feel like her character's in such a weird spot. Where do you think they're going here toward Mania? Like, what path do you think she might be on? Because I can't gauge it at all, and I'm intrigued, but I don't know where it's going.
And before I throw to Nick on this, Sean, let me just follow up. Do you think it's weird, or is she in a different place than she was months ago? Like, do you think her character is doing something different, or do you think it's, you're talking more storyline, or do you see something actually different with her character?
See, I don't really know, because I feel like there's been nothing really good with her lately. I feel like she's just been, they're not really going with a storyline. I don't feel like there is a story with her right now. I just feel like she's going against damage control, you know, sort of, but then she's not. But I don't know. I really don't know. I can't say. I can't answer.
Yeah, okay. No, that helped clarify where you're coming from. Nick, what do you think of Miller?
She feels forgotten to me. Now, I don't know if the path was just to, you know, save her for Flair for WrestleMania, which we know now that won't happen. But there doesn't seem to be anything. You know, there was a time where it felt so obvious that Bianca Belair was going to turn heel, and then that didn't happen. Listen, especially when you're dealing with a division the size and scope of the WWE women's divisions on each of the shows, there's going to be a natural come down if you're not in the world title situation right now. So you can kind of still maintain that gravitas that had been earned by being a, you know, longer than a year long champion, but still not be in the picture right there. There's almost like you're just in a holding pattern. That's inherent with something like this. However, I totally agree with you. I think that this has been a character that's been in need of rejuvenation for very, very long time. But now she's just existing without a storyline, without a purpose. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of, you know, passion attached to her to rewin the title. There's no mission statement in her overall behavior. And then you pair that with, you know, Wade loves the dancing when she comes out and the, you know, slapping of the hips and all that. It becomes reductive of the overall character that, you know, was once main eventing WrestleMania.
Yeah, I want to see more adult layers to who she is. And it seems like it's still the same. It's weird in that they're not doing more with her. I think she is in real life, a well-rounded, multi-layered person who on television could be portraying something closer to that. And we don't get it. She's got her, you know, twirling braid and her skipping, and her dancing, and she's playing to young girls, and, you know, there's a sort of, you know, inherited baseline core of her character, which is she's a role model to little girls because she, you know, fights the right way and is resilient against these people trying to take her down. And that's just been what she is all along, but it just seems like they can't be bothered, or they've lost confidence that if they tried that they could get more out of her. But I don't agree with that. I mean, the way she carries herself when she's not in the, you know, wrestling character mode with the cameras rolling, when she's doing mainstream interviews, there's more there. There's more there to explore and tap into and present on television, a more layered, nuanced act. So it's disappointing. And I think then what we see is, Sean, it leads to the frustration that you're feeling watching her, which is they don't have a lot to work with because they don't build layers with her. So it feels like there's something not there that should be there when you watch her in this situation where she's just sort of, you know, not a generic baby face, but sort of the baby face who's just playing the role, but the heels are the ones who are more interesting because there's more going on with them. Sean, back to you.
Mm. Yeah. So this is what I was just thinking now as you guys were talking. Is there a possibility, because I assume my thought is, and I didn't tell Nick this, so I'm wondering what he thinks too, but I'm wondering if Jade comes in at the Rumble. That's my guess. Jade comes in for the Rumble. I'm thinking they build to a Jade-Bianca match. Jade comes in as a heel. Jade beats Bianca, and that's where Bianca, maybe after Mania, turns heel. Because I think she needs a heel turn right now, honestly. I think that's where they need to go. She was a great heel in NXT. I think that's ultimately where they might be going. Do you guys think that's possible?
Possible, yes. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I think it is possible. To me, there's too much that's still out there in terms of information to know on Jade's progression, on, you know, their comfort level with how she's performing at the Performance Center. Is she WrestleMania ready? Is for the benefit of her and the show? I think, you know, in the video game version of wrestling, sure, that sounds fantastic. I think it's ultimately going to come down to, is she main stage ready for them? But I agree with you. I think Jade is the person that to be standing opposite of Bianca right now that would feel the most main event worthy, the most interesting for Bianca to go up against with at WrestleMania that is readily available to us, because there's no other person that sticks out to me as saying, oh, well, that would be exciting to see. I think Jade versus Bianca, if all things are, you know, on a positive on a positive front, that seems good to me. Otherwise, I think you're potentially looking at Bianca not being on the show.
Yeah, she's got to be on the show. They have something with Jade Cargill. They believe they have something with Jade Cargill that can be a really, really big star. And I worry that in telling that story, they're going to prioritize Jade without realizing what they have in Bianca that they haven't been taking advantage of. But maybe something with Jade can bring something new out in Bianca. I just wish that there was more to Belair's character right now so that Jade showing up felt more compelling, because Jade was going to take something from Belair that was better established on TV than just sort of the inertia of Belair being a de facto top act doing her thing. But I'm actually somewhat optimistic that doing something with Jade can actually bring something out in Belair, whether they are even try, like, really, if they make it. Right now, I wish they make a concerted effort to make Bianca more well-rounded character, but I don't think there's a way to avoid that, is my point, if Jade shows up and opposes her. I think then that might bring something out in Belair that has always been there but hasn't been featured yet, and they won't be able to avoid it. It'll just happen naturally when they put those two opposite of each other. John, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Going back to the beginning, the bloodline stuff, I didn't get to hear you guys at the beginning, so I don't know what you said. I hope I don't reiterate a lot of the stuff you brought up. I just wanted to kind of get my aspect of it. I didn't like this tonight at all. I like Aldis's part of it, in the sense of he's a alpha male. I like that. But yes, the six-man tag just out of nowhere. And then, like, again, you have the three guys that are going against Roman that are pretending to be together, and are they going to coexist? Which, again, they go to that way too much. I don't like that. And then you have, you know, to me, if you're the bloodline, and this is what – I'll get to Jimmy in a second. With the bloodline, two against three, that shouldn't matter to you. You should be like, I'm going to dominate these guys. It doesn't matter. And for Heyman to go, you know, kind of, you know, weasel his way, which he did a good job of. He was funny in his role, but it just didn't feel like him. It didn't feel like he'd be going to sleazy behind guys. Oh, can I get you to wrestle with us? And blah, 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 blah. I just thought that was bad. I didn't like any of that. And like I said, I told Nick, and I think I told you, Wade, that I don't like the four-way just because it made Roman look really bad. Like, why would Roman cheat during the match and know that you're going to have a four-way? Like, that makes Roman, to me, look dumb. Like, I know he's trying to assert dominance over them, but to know that's you're going to have a four-way match. Like, that's why I don't like the four-way. Like, the end was good as far as I like the three guys eventually getting together and conquering the bloodline, which they need to be doing. But I just thought to get there, I didn't like any of it. Is that kind of what you guys were talking about, or did I add something different that you guys didn't bring up?
No, we actually had an extended discussion on Heyman showing this different or wider range and a different side of himself than we've seen. And I kind of got into the version of Heyman we saw with Reigns, which felt like a wise man in control who knew his job was to study Roman and serve Roman and protect the power of Roman as the head of the table in the bloodline. And now it is a little bit more of an 80s, 90s Paul Heyman, which shows more of his range. It's a different side of him than we've seen, at least in big doses in WWE in recent years, even going back to the Lesnar stuff. So, yeah, we talked at length about that. We did not talk about Nick Aldis, though. And by the way, there are things I liked about the main event and how they told the story they chose to tell once they booked the four-way. And I'll frame it that way. But we didn't talk about Nick Aldis, and I was tempted to bring that up before we went to call to Nick, but I just figured we wouldn't leave the callers holding. But now Sean's brought it up. So I'm curious for your take on Nick Aldis tonight. Again, standing up to Heyman, not relinquishing the microphone to him when Heyman grabbed for it, telling him you're under the illusion that this is a disagreement between equals. I assure you it's not. It just seems like we're heading towards – I mean, are we heading towards Nick Aldis versus Roman Reigns in a match? They haven't really talked overtly about Aldis being an ex-wrestler or a retired wrestler. They haven't – I mean, it's kind of a little irritating that – they just introduced Nick Aldis as a guy in control, but they're not, other than Corey Graves saying, you know, he's, you know, been around the world, or he's, you know, known around the world. And just, it was very, they didn't go into detail about what his credentials were to get this job. They just decided it wasn't worth bothering. So, but what that has done is it's left the door wide open. It's left open all these possibilities for if they do want to then embrace and acknowledge that he's a former championship level wrestler in different companies. And he is, I mean, nobody a year ago would have predicted Nick Aldis would be the guy to end Roman Reigns' title reign. And I am not predicting that, but I'm not sure that isn't something that they're going to try to sell people on sometime in the next year. Nick Aldis is younger than Roman by years and not, you know, a great ring general. No one's going to mistake him for, you know, Kenny Omega in his prime. But there's something about him with his presence. And I mean, we saw it with Cody we've seen a lot of times where he gives off this aura of a main eventer and has this X factor that very few people have. So yeah, Nick, just talk about where you think they're going with him and what you think the possibilities still are.
Well, first of all, I think Nick Aldis is doing a phenomenal job. I think he, of everybody that's filled these general manager authority roles, not only acts the part very, very well, but looks the part and just is embodying the role in a way that seems that, yes, even as an ex-wrestler, you can kind of forget that momentarily and think, this guy really is in charge because he comes across and is acting like he is in charge. Wait, I do think one thing I would say is by the time when Nick Aldis enters into a wrestling ring, I don't foresee him actually standing opposite Roman Reigns. I think it would be more in the lines of him going one-on-one with Solo Sikoa or something along those lines in his first match. Not dissimilar from in the late 90s when Sergeant Slaughter was in the authoritative role and going opposite DX. He didn't eventually have his match with Shawn Michaels. He had it with his enforcer, who was at the time Triple H, and all of the mechanisms that Triple H brought with him in that China. I would think there was handcuffs and, you know, all kinds of crazy things. That to me is more where Nick Aldis will be positioned, because I think eventually he is, you know, given how he's being presented on screen, he has a pride attached to him. He has obviously, you know, he's not, you know, standing down to the bloodline. And that all ultimately leads to confrontation sooner rather than later. So I wouldn't be surprised if by the time Money in the Bank happens, you know, he's in the ring one-on-one against Solo Sikoa.
All right, Sean, I'll back to you.
No, it's interesting. I'm excited about Aldis for sure, what he might do. I mean, I've never gotten to see him actually wrestle, really. So, I mean, if he does end up wrestling, I mean, I'm intrigued to see what he does. Real quick about the Carmelo thing, because I had to go back and rewatch, because when I first watched it, like, looked that bad. It didn't look bad to me at first at all. I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of weird. But then going back and seeing it, I was like, all right, you know, that was a little worse on Theory's part than I thought. And then with Carmelo, I just think if he was going to be on NXT having storylines, I would have just waited to put him on the main roster after that. I just don't like when they're doing both the main roster and NXT, because especially with a newer guy, because I'd like a newer guy to come and be fresh and just be able to focus on the main roster and become a star there instead of having to go to NXT and do all that stuff and then come back. I think that hurt Carmelo a little bit. I mean, the match was fine before that, but I just wish they'd have kept him on NXT for a while if they're going to do that. And then the main point I wanted to bring up to you guys was going back to, it was a quick segment, but with Lashley, Street Profits, and then Cross doing his thing with AOP. I mean, I'm intrigued more than I thought I would be. I mean, with Cross, I still don't like Cross really at all. But him with AOP, you know, you're bringing them back kind of as a strong duo. So I'm curious what you've been thinking about what they're doing and what that might lead to, if it's big or small or whatever. And then with Lashley and the Profits, still don't think they've been defined very well. But even if the Profits are now being faces again, but at least have an edge, I'm definitely intrigued by that too. At least it'd be something different. The Profits were kind of stale doing what they were doing, but they were kind of, you know, now they've been defined in a weird way, but now at least it feels like they're faces. So what do you think about the whole dynamic with all six guys? Like, where do you think that might be going? And that's really all I had, guys. Wade, I appreciate you, man. Nick, it's always fun being on with you, dude. I'm glad I got to do your show again, and hopefully I get to do it here in the future. And I appreciate you guys always taking my call. It's always fun.
Sounds good, Sean. Yeah, if Don ever takes another week off, then, you know, maybe Nick will invite you back. Nick?
Wait, nobody's laughing at that joke.
You don't know that. You're probably right, but you don't know that. All right, so the the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley were intended to be heels, and now they're not. But it doesn't seem like they've got a great idea of how to carry themselves in this role. I'm not like down on it. It just feels like, well, we got to regroup here because the fans didn't let us turn heel. They cheered us. It was, the headwind was too strong. So now we're just going to let them cheer us, but we're going to dress better and not, you know, not do all the mannerisms and sing it and all that stuff and that we did before. How do you feel about this? And how do you feel about AOP and Karrion Kross as their first foes setting up? Maybe we'll get six-man titles in WWE finally, Nick. No.
Well, no, please, Lord, no. Lashley and Street Profits should have never been a heel act. I mean, you know, Wade, I say all the time that, you know, in my day job, I work at a college campus. I'm telling you, of all the acts that my young teenage, you know, male students would be excited to emulate in the everyday world, it would be how Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits have been presenting with, like, the super well-dressed, confident strut that they all have there. It wasn't giving Ric Flair. It was giving, like, the dream, I wouldn't even say Wall Street because it's more fashionable than Wall Street. It's every man about town that you have seen that someone is, you know, would aspire to be like. So why is there to root against, especially in this era where you have, you know, three really strong, good-looking, confident black young men? I mean, that's worth rooting for at a time when there's not a whole lot of them on our screens. So that didn't ever fit to me as being heel as a fit for them. Let's go back to Karrion Kross. First of all, I don't mean this as an insult to Mr. Kross. I don't know you. I wish you the very, very best. I only know you from what I've seen since your real return to WWE. I was at last year at this point. Every time he returns or re-enters a new program after taking weeks away, the moment that he comes back in whatever the capacity is more exciting than anything that comes after it. The possibility that surrounds him and Scarlett is always, like, really cool. The entrance always really, really works. And then there's this beat moment where you're like, oh, this feels a little too cartoonish, or this feels very like 80s villainy to me. And then it's off the rails from that point on. And that's exactly how I feel right now. I think we're trying to make this thing work. I'm not convinced it's ever going to work. And I feel bad saying that, but, you know, even last week when AOP came back, that's a really big move. It's a cool move. It's exciting to have them back. And then you have this overacting in the center. It just doesn't do it for me, Wade. And maybe he does it for other people. Maybe folks are buying tickets left, right, and center to see Karrion Kross. I don't see it. I don't see it from an in-ring perspective. I don't see it from a charisma perspective. And I don't see it in a promo perspective. So that's honestly what I really think.
I don't know if you've ever stood in line to go to a Halloween haunted house and then, like, the hosts or the MCs of the whole experience come out and talk to you before you enter, and they kind of tell you the rules, like, you can't touch anybody else and whatever, you know. And that's what Karrion Kross and Scarlett come across as. Like, you can imagine them if they got laid off from WWE, they'd be working at haunted houses, walking out, making spooky faces and trying to scare the little girls who are in line to go through the Halloween haunted house. And yeah, it does feel a little out of place in this, and you're right. You get your hopes up a little bit. I don't know if hopes up is the right word, but it's more interesting when it starts. And then, yeah, the bell has to ring and the ring entrance stops and you're stuck with bad acting and a one-dimensional Scarlett character in Karrion Kross, who, you know, doesn't seem to want to actually, or can't physically, or whatever the reason is, take actual wrestling bumps, which really limits the quality of his matches. But having them manage AOP does take away some of the weaknesses of the act, and it might take some of the pressure off the areas where he was weak. It's been fun seeing Paul Ellering back. I don't know, you know, how long he's going to be around, if it's full-time or not. I haven't heard, but if he's going to be always part of the act or he's just sort of here to transition AOP into it. But it's a nice little tribute to the origin story for them, and obviously going back to the Road Warriors, who AOP are based on, is overstating it, but inspired by, or they were preceded by in the same realm. So I'm a little, believe it or not, I'm a little more optimistic about this because it's different than just reintroducing just Cross and Scarlet. So yeah. I'm willing to give it a little bit of a chance. Yeah.
I'm not down on AOP, if you know me. I'm down on Karrion Kross. I don't see this. Well, I think maybe in 3 months they're all still together. Maybe 6 months if they're still together, I think we have a problem for AOP.
Yeah, I guess my point is we haven't seen Karrion Kross and Scarlett play off of two or three other people in the same faction or act. So does that take some of the pressure off of them? Is Karrion okay in a small dose reacting to AOP or throwing to them or talking about them instead of himself? And does that put him in a better place as a performer? And that's just the thing. I just don't know. And I'm open to that possibility.
Listen,
I guess that optimistic is overstating it.
Well, I think some people work much better in ensembles. I think you see that in all different forms of entertainment.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the effective lead, though. I think if he was just one of a four, that'd be fine. I think they probably, if they were going to do the faction, shouldn't lean in so much on him as being, you know, the face of it.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Greg in Waterloo, Iowa next if you want to be on the show tonight. If you're live streaming us, I'll remind you of the phone number, 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call. We're still hoping to hear from Sam, who attended tonight, but as he noted, and I noted earlier, the weather is awful, so he's paying attention to getting home safely. So we may not have an on-site correspondent.
Wait, did you see there was a lot of empty seats at that arena, which I assume were because of the weather? You could see large chunks of them, so I imagine it was dangerous.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, let's go to Greg. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's up, Greg?
Yes, hello. I can say snowed in here. I can say pretty confidently that, it's not pleasant out there. So, and that's also the case in Lincoln. I'm sure it's about probably 350 miles or so from where I'm at here. So, I don't think it's pleasant out there. So my thoughts, if I missed anything earlier and you guys talked about this, my apologies. But first of all, I'm wishing Carmelo Hayes and Grayson Waller well. You know, it's not fun to see matches end like that, but the increased precautionary measures are definitely a positive. So, it's good that that's been they're really, really taking initiative to try to avoid anything serious taking place in the ring. So I think that's definitely a positive. And I wanted to talk about this whole thing going on with the story with Bayley and the damage control group, because, I've been a big Bayley fan for a while, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully seeing her like get a big WrestleMania moment this year. And it looks like they're heading in that direction. And I guess I could just lay out a scenario of where I think this is headed, and I'll get you guys' response to it, if that's okay. It seems to me that right now that I'm sensing there's going to be maybe the Royal Rumble is going to be a betrayal of some kind, or they're going to abandon her or even turn on her. And I don't and I say that because I think that next week they're doing this match with Alba and Isla Dawn against for the tag team titles, which, by the way, I don't know how wise that is, because you might be throwing them out in front of a dead crowd because they've done very little in the past 8 months, so I don't know how wise that decision is. But my sense is that's setting up Kabuki Warriors to challenge for the women's tag team titles, and I think that once they win the titles, then Bayley becomes expendable to them because, they get all the gold and then Bayley has nothing. I mean, I could see that scenario playing out. And so my sense is that there's going to be – that Bayley's not going to win the Royal Rumble. There's going to be some type of betrayal that takes place there, and then that's going to lead into the WrestleMania story taking place. And I'm really cautiously optimistic about this story because I think if it's told right, it could be great to watch play out. So.
Yeah, Nick, what do you think of that?
I think that's pretty similar to what I just laid out about a half hour ago. So I think that's the path. No, I don't hate it. I actually
would
say I don't love it, though, either. Yes, great minds. But I do think that is where we are going. I've said, just to bring up to speed, I don't see Bayley winning the Royal Rumble. I think that that's too much has been made of that right now. If that seemed a little too obvious to me. But if it does happen, then it happens. But I agree with you. I think in her losing, she would be betrayed by the others and just, you know, fully beaten down one last time. And, you know, I talked to Tom earlier today, you know, Don Colihue, and we were talking about, you know, scenarios and, you know, what happens if Dakota Kai is cleared to return at some point. Does this, you know, does she get involved at the Royal Rumble? There's a lot there that they can do. I think there's still a beat missing to me with the storytelling of this, that, and I think it is coming from Bayley is really acting opposite herself at this point, this entire time. And she can't carry all loads of, you know, the only thing she is facing is just scowls looking at her or, you know, just a bunch of blank faces along the way. I would like to see her be able to develop and evolve based on actually having, you know, someone from a real promo standpoint be able to work opposite against. And I have to say, as much as I want Bayley to be able to have a really showcase WrestleMania moment, I think she's deserved it. And as much as I love Io Sky, and I think she's probably the most interesting women's wrestler to watch during matches, it seems an underwhelming women's world title match at WrestleMania to me, quite honestly.
Greg, back to you.
That's interesting, and I don't, you know, I won't argue with that. It is interesting that Bayley was. I don't think this is playing out on television, but Bayley did an interview this week where she mentioned that Nick Aldis was on the bump and basically on the network on the Peacock show and was talking about how, you know, the damage control mystique is gone and all this, and something's changed in the relationship. Which I like that because it means that, like, you know, that Aldis is basically laying out like. Sowing seeds for like future storyline developments in his role, which I like. So Bayley had mentioned that in an interview, although it would have been nice if they had like some type of televised promo segment where Nick Aldis says something like that and plants that seed in her mind. But and also, I guess the other thing I'll say is, and I'll let you guys go after this, is I'm enjoying the other thing that I probably took out of the show the most, because the main event scene, I know they're just leading up to that four-way match at the Royal Rumble, really doesn't interest me too much, but I really like the work they're doing with Santos Escobar, pairing him with two of the more talented, underutilized guys in the company, and Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo, and I like where that's going, and there's a number of ways it can go. I'm guessing it's going to lead into something with WrestleMania season with Rey Mysterio, but I'm really, I like that those guys are getting TV time and that they're getting really something to sink their teeth into, so I'll leave it at that.
Cool. Great. Good. Really good hearing from you, Greg. Thanks for calling. I was going to bring up the storyline with Escobar and get your take, Nick, on the vignette, kind of establishing the code of conduct of his family. Did it feel fresh and new and well done, or did it feel a little repetitive, or how'd you feel about it?
It didn't feel either of those things. It felt right. It felt fine. I wouldn't say fresh, though. I think, you know, unfortunately, Angel and Humberto have been on screen for so many years at this point, and they've gone through so many stages of which they were the verified losers that it's hard to then kind of get your brain to, you know, just accept that suddenly they're on an upward trajectory. With that said, anybody could see that there's star power there, especially with Angel Garza. And I think that this is it's a recalibration to a degree. It's a righting of the ship when it with regards to them. And I think actually they fit visually better as backup for him. He seemed a little bit more motivated too this week. You know, sometimes, and I don't know if it's an issue with how I articulate it or whatnot, but I was sharing last week that when it comes to Santos, I think he is really good in the promo sphere and the initial onset of a match. And then somewhere along the lines, his wrestling charisma dissipates a bit for me in the ring. But I thought he was very, very good on commentary today in that he wasn't annoying. And I know that that's a pretty low bar to cross, but he didn't stick out for the wrong reasons. I kind of
said that after your show.
Sometimes I listen to myself. I'm like, who is that annoying man? It's me. Why
it wasn't
me?
Annoying this week. It was a good show.
I know. I got a really modulate this voice. But anyway, Wade, you threw it off of me. But what I did
I
tell you one thing I did like? When Carlito's music played, he stood right up and was ready to fight. I liked that. He was in hiding, or whatever. He was ready to fight, and then he got attacked from behind. I think Santos is a star. I think he's still figuring out exactly the best approach, and there's still tweaks to be made. But this is a tweak worth you know, going with. I like the trio.
What about Andrade showing up and reuniting with Joaquin Wild and Cruz del Toro to create a three-on-three faction war? Jason Paul brought that up in his report.
I was going to say, did I miss a segment? Was I eating a pinoli cookie at that point today?
Jason just speculated on that maybe being how this plays out, because they've kept Cruz and Wild involved. And, I mean, they didn't just, like, squash them. It seems like there's, you know, room for retribution here. And so they just need to find somebody to help, you know, help lead them and round out a group.
Well, and I think that, listen, especially Joaquin Wilde has been impressing with some of his, you know, the height of, and the distance of his splashes that he's able to get on, especially on NXT. So it doesn't surprise me that he's been getting more screen time and keeping him in the conversation. I don't know that I love that for Andrade. I went back way this weekend. This was how I was spending my time to watch Andrade versus Johnny Gargano at that takeover from Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
Was it 2018, I think it was? But, oh my gosh, a fantastic, fantastic match. They need to do whatever they can to get Andrade there. You know, I don't know that him in some kind of six-way tag feud is ever going to elevate him to that level. I think they have one shot with Andrade to come in, and that's as a real star and present him as such right from the get-go. And I don't know if it's waiting many, many months for Charlotte's return. I mean, who knows if that's an approach that they would be willing to take, but something big needs to come along with him, and I think it needs to be right on the onset. That is not how I would approach him.
Yeah. All right. Very good. We'll wrap up with one email that hits three topics that we have not covered yet. Azan from St. Louis says, good evening, Wade and Nick. What if Naomi returned to help Bayley instead of Sasha Banks? Her return to the company is rumored to be imminent. Do you like that, where it turns into Bayley and Naomi against some version of her ex-partners?
No, I think Naomi would actually be better fit in the conversation we were talking about with what happens with Bianca Belair. I think that it, as a stand-in for if Jade is not someone who's opposite of Belair going into WrestleMania, mm-hmm. I think Naomi can fill in that spot. I don't see her fitting in necessarily with Bayley.
And then number two, at this point, would it be best to take Cameron Grimes off TV for 6 months or send him back to NXT to rehab? Nick, poor Grimes, they advertised the match. He gets beat up beforehand. I got confused about what was taped after last week's show versus what was going on live in
right.
the ring.
Me too, me too.
Like, yeah, last week. Yeah, yeah. It's like, did this all happen in the ring after last week? And then, that's why they attacked Grimes. I'm like, because he was coming out for the match. So there wasn't quite it's clear a transition. I don't think it crossed their mind because it was obvious to them, but confusing to me and apparently you too, or at least ambiguous. So yeah, Grimes, how do you feel about him? And
yes, take
how
him
he's
off.
Been used?
Take him off. I put him in NXT or just put him on pause. Triple H and his booking committee should be better than that. He's too talented, and they've worked too hard to erase some of the stigma of those past indiscretions when it comes to the booking of talent. To have someone like him be wasted.
Yeah. And then finally, what do you think of Kevin Patrick as the lead play-by-play without Michael Cole after 2 weeks? Yeah, they've reduced it down to a two-man announce team, and Patrick is back in he was the lead guy, and Cole was supporting him even when Cole was around. But, yeah, how are you feeling about Patrick and just Patrick and Graves as a team without Cole?
I mean, he wasn't painful and didn't stick out to me for wrong reasons. I think Corey Graves was sticking out to me more for the right reasons, like particularly when you were just detailing earlier his call for the called off match. That stuck out to me. I think in general it was fine. I think it was fine. I don't really have much more to say than that.
Yeah, yeah. I think Patrick is doing a fine job.
He's serviceable.
Yeah, I haven't had as much of an issue with him as others. I don't think he's great. I don't know if he has great in him, but he serves his purpose. And Corey Graves is a strong personality. He is an alpha announcer. He's, yes, he's a color guy, but he pushes beyond that. He's clearly the lead, even if we label Kevin Patrick the lead play-by-play guy. Corey Graves is the veteran. He's in charge. He's quick and sharp and knows the product, and he knows how to serve the product on commentary, even if he's not going to be a traditional play-by-play guy. So it's fine to have somebody who's a little more meek or a little less experienced and in Kevin Patrick. I like that Graves doesn't just treat him like a punching bag. Like, I think that can get old. I think Graves at his weakest is when he's being a bully. There's times for that, but I think that was more of a Vince McMahon thing that he got off on and encouraged, and Graves has pulled back on that. I think there's just, you know, giving somebody a hard time is one thing, but seeming like you're trying to emasculate them week after week, every time they make some sort of innocent error or slip up, or you just find something that isn't even there to pick on them for. Graves has done that, and he's not doing it with Kevin very much, and I think that's good because you want Kevin to seem credible, not like a complete buffoon who doesn't belong on the air. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Why do you think I stopped doing the post shows?
It was all, okay.
It was a joke. That was such a good joke, Wade. How did you no-sell that for even
a week? It was good, and I was going to follow up with another. No. You did great, and I shouldn't have tried to follow up, and that's why I stopped. And I'm like, no, it's a good joke on its own. I don't need to add to it. And I was like, I should have just moved on. Why am I even trying to do some sort of part two to that? That was perfect.
To your point, their announcing in general has so greatly improved across all elements of WWE. I think that nothing is standing out. And honestly, sometimes the fact that it's just like laying in the background is actually serves as a pleasant enough watch. I mean, not everything show is going to have the best call. I think that's just how it is.
Yeah. Nick, is there anything else from tonight's show in your notes or on your mind you want to bring up?
No, Wade, it wasn't a thrilling show. It was ordinary, I would say, heading into what I think is going to be a really ramped up season for WWE. I think in general, a decision really has to be made in pretty soon as to like how they are going to be approaching SmackDown on the times when Roman is not there. If those weeks are going to be happening during WrestleMania season, this is feeling very much like a come down. And wait, real quick, the Butch backstage segment where did I interpret that right? That they're going to shift his name? Is that how you interpreted that as well?
I did too. Yep.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch.
Todd Martin will be very happy.
Who? I tried following Todd Martin. You know, after we did the, what's it called? The Premium Live Event post shows. When I say, Todd, great show, man. What does he think he is, Madonna? You can't DM him? I got rejected. This person is, I said,
interesting.
So I unfollowed him. I said, you know what? If you're not going to follow me, I ain't following you back. I'm going to leave it up to him. And next time we get on the call, I'm going to impress his ass so much, he's going to follow me.
Well, the good people are abandoning that platform, and Todd was never on it much anyway. So maybe there's a different route to go. He I think he visits that platform less than he used to.
I'll go on his OnlyFans then, and then I'll message him there.
Maybe we'll all reunite over at Threads when they add DMs or something like that.
Sounds
By the way, Sam just emailed 9 minutes ago. He says, sorry, no way I can call in. This is treacherous.
Oh, man. Please save Sam. Please stop emailing. Just let us know in the morning that you got home okay.
Yes, very good. Well, Nick, it has been a pleasure. It's always great talking WWE with you. I look forward to this weekend show with Tom and Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure as part of the PW Torch Datacast lineup. So search PW Torch on your podcast app, or you can stream it right from our main website, pwtorch.com. Nick, any fun plans this weekend?
No. Just hanging around Somerville. Just gonna enjoy. I'll be in Atlantic City next weekend. Wade, I don't know if you knew
specifically,
this.
Specifically, so people can stalk you, and then Tom can be
upset
for telling where you are.
Oh, I know. He gets so annoying with that. I want to be stalked. I bring it. the series of shows I perform in, the Big Gay Italian series, has been signed by Hard Rock. So Hard Rock, as an entity, has purchased the residency rights. So we'll be performing at Hard Rock in Atlantic City, hopefully at the Guitar in Hollywood, Florida, and then maybe Tampa. So we're out there. So if you're when I'm on tour, come see me, please. Seriously, I would love that.
That'd be great. Come
and
to,
not
come
cousin
to,
Nikki.
Come to the Twin
not,
City.
Not the cousin
yeah, right, yes.
that is doing at the little VFWs over in like Bath, Pennsylvania. Please don't go see him.
So
I
are you the
baby?
Are you a baby face or a heel in this play?
Always the heel.
Yes, totally. I know the plot.
And they've been gradually removing more clothes. So if you enjoy that, come see me in that. Like, well, I'm glad as I'm getting closer to 40 that you all think this is still a good thing. So, okay.
Well, there you go. You've either you've encouraged a few listeners and discouraged a few others. So at least people know what they're getting.
I think the encouragement is high. All right, Wade. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this. You're always an honor to be on a show with you. You are a legend and an icon yourself. And thank you for having me.
Aw. Thanks, Nick. I wish more people said that. I mean, thank you. It's very, very gracious. Very kind of you, I should say. Thanks, everybody. And thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you all next time, likely after Collision tomorrow night and after Battle of the Belts. I think we're going to do the live show after Battle of the Belts. I think they've added enough to that lineup. We will not do a post show during Battle of the Belts, but we'll actually watch it and then do a post show.
That's good. I didn't realize Collision was still on. That's good.
Barely, yeah. All right, thanks, everybody.
Bye.